You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. This week, we'll be talking about the importance of university reputations and why branding is often considered a bad word in academia. We'll also reveal the results of the 2018 Times Higher Education World Reputation Rankings. And joining me today is our rankings editor and guru, Ellie Bothwell. I also spoke with Ovidia Lim, Chief Communications Officer at the National University of Singapore, about how branding has been key to NUS becoming one of the top institutions in the world. But first, Ellie, hi.
Hi.
Is rankings guru a fair title to give you? Would it be...
I think it's quite generous, but I'll take it. Yeah.
Okay. We'll give it to you for today then. So we're doing the World Reputation Rankings again this year. Can you just tell us a little bit about why university branding is important?
Yeah, well, I think when I speak to, you know, some of the top universities in the world and kind of ask them why they do so well and why they've got such a kind of world-class prestige, the answer that they nearly always give is the fact that it's their people that kind of drives their organization. So the fact that they, you know, have managed to attract really top academics and really high quality students. And we know that sort of in order to do that, you know, a university's reputation is really, really important. So it's something that, you know, students tend to look at as one of the main factors is either a university's ranking position or just the kind of reputation more generally among the public or in the academic community. They look at that when choosing where to apply and enrol, and obviously academics look at it when looking at their next move. And so, you know, really, I mean, branding is obviously seen as a kind of marketing thing, but actually if you're looking at it from a kind of perspective of what does a university stand for, you know, it's important because that's how they can attract the top talent and become a really leading university.
Right. And employability also is a big key factor in this as well. What kind of name your university has among the industry that the graduates are trying to then go on and get jobs in.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously, yeah, it needs to be kind of well known enough, you know, within, say, a particular field or, yeah, within its kind of specialism. I mean, I guess what's interesting is that there are some universities that are maybe kind of not super well known on the kind of world stage among the public, but that will be known, you know, among businesses in you know, quite niche areas. So, you know, it's not always about the kind of overall reputation of the whole university. It can be, you know, the reputation of a specific discipline or faculty.
And how they're able to produce, yeah, skilled graduates in that specific field.
Yeah.
Why do you think that, we touched on this a little bit about branding kind of being a marketing term by marketeers. Why do you think it's a challenge for some universities to embrace this idea of having a good brand and a strong reputation?
Yeah, I think it's something that probably the academic side of an organization probably struggles with more than maybe the administrative side. Because obviously, you know, academics are very focused on, you know, generally on their own kind of research or their own kind of teaching focused. And it's very kind of evidence-based and substantive. And I think maybe branding is seen as something that's much more kind of subjective and superficial and doesn't really speak to the substance of what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. But I think it's interesting because I was speaking to Merrick Gertler, who's the president of the University of Toronto, a couple of years ago about this and about brand. And he said he thought brand was considered a kind of dirty word among academia. But actually, he said, if you think about, universities have a brand. He was like, whether they like it or not, they just do. And so it's kind of not really something that, it doesn't really serve a university very well to kind of ignore that whole side of things. You know, it's much better to say, okay, look, we're going to have a brand and we might as well try and make that brand, you know, the most positive kind of accurate reflection of what we are. And so therefore, you know, they kind of need to care about it.
Yeah, because people are going to see you. You are a public-facing entity, just like people would see any other company, for lack of a better word. So the public is already seeing you in that way. So it's important to kind of take control of it and have a bit of agency over it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also, and you know, you just mentioned the word company. I think that's probably maybe another reason why universities or academics don't necessarily like the idea, because it's this whole kind of universities as businesses thing, which is maybe a kind of side that we've seen more recently, the idea that they're kind of actually commercial kind of organizations. And
right,
I think branding is maybe seen as the kind of business side.
Right. kind of falling into the marketization of higher education is lots of people are talking about. But I think arguably these are two separate things. I think marketization of higher education and kind of more of a neoliberal approach to higher education is something that's quite separate to branding and just having a good reputation for the students that you're trying to attract, but then also helping them get good jobs whenever they graduate. So in terms of successful marketing strategies, are there, from your couple of years covering this topic with different institutions, are there any that stand out to you that are kind of exemplary for how they're doing well with branding?
Well, there was quite an interesting, this was quite a, I guess, a visual campaign from the University of Melbourne a few years ago. And these were kind of adverts actually that appeared in our magazine and elsewhere, and you can see them on the campus. And it was essentially kind of bodies, like people, almost like it looked like they'd kind of almost jumped in the air and like kind of slammed their bodies together and created these kind of cool shapes that were supposed to kind of symbolise a collaboration within the university and the fact that it was kind of different disciplines coming together. And some of the shapes that these bodies made were supposed to look a bit like, I don't know, the shape of DNA. And I thought that was quite interesting because you see, I mean, quite a lot of branding in terms of like visual adverts is quite similar with universities, and it's all quite samey, and I thought that was quite a clever way of kind of showing their impact. But I mean, in terms of a more, I guess, an overall kind of brand, I think MIT is an organization that's done really well. You know, it is considered quite a kind of unique higher education institution compared to others, you know.
Right.
It's kind of very seen as very sort of creative, very bottom up, very interdisciplinary. And it's quite difficult to kind of, you know, establish how exactly it's managed to build this brand. But I think a lot of it is just the fact that, you know, it's run in a very different way, and it's, you know, been quite good at, or its academics have been quite good at kind of sharing the fact that that's how it operates. So I actually spoke to their vice president, and he said that, you know, the main reason why MIT has got such a strong reputation is its people, you know, like I mentioned earlier, but also that it creates a kind of a really creative environment where those people can thrive and can really look into their own research in ways that they want to, and they have a kind of continuous assessment of scholars as well. So it is, you know, it's not kind of they're not completely left to their own devices. They are actually monitored very, very closely, but then they're able to kind of choose the direction they want to go in. And so I think those two points kind of combined makes them, you know, have quite a unique brand in that way.
So they're able to really kind of convey this quite unique culture that they've got on campus to the rest of the world and kind of use that as their unique
point. But it's not something that it's not very kind of obvious that they're the ones conveying it. I think maybe partly, you know, the kind of graduates that they have and the academics maybe kind of do a lot of the kind of selling.
Sure.
For them, and the alumni do it for them, which I think is, I guess, probably the ideal situation to be in, where it's not really seen that the university itself is the one doing the kind of branding,
the promotion of
it.
It's the word of mouth, which is key. So this year we have a new fresh set of rankings for the World Reputation Rankings. What's the methodology behind this, Ellie? Can you remind me?
Yeah, so it's an invitation only survey of scholars. So we just survey scholars that have, you know, themselves kind of are very strong in their discipline and would likely have a good idea of which other institutions across the world are doing well. And we ask each academic to name no more than 15 universities that they think are strong in their discipline in teaching and research. So there's a kind of separate teaching and research list, and then they're combined to create the overall list. And then we make sure that the scholars come from a diverse range of disciplines and a diverse range of countries. So, and we weight it on those as well. So we make sure that it's representative of the kind of whole global academic community.
Well, should we offer our listeners an official countdown of the rankings this year? A joint countdown?
Yes.
Okay, I'll start. So we've got... this is our top 10 for the Times Higher Education World Reputation Rankings 2018. We have two institutions in joint ninth place this year. It's the University of Chicago and UCLA.
And at eighth place, it's another US university, Yale.
At seventh, it's Princeton.
At sixth, UC Berkeley.
Coming in at fifth, it's Oxford.
At fourth, it's the University of Cambridge.
Three is Stanford University.
Number two is MIT.
And number one this year is Harvard University. So I think anybody, it would be pretty easy for them to quickly realize that there's quite a dominance of U.S. institutions on our list this year, as there has been in previous lists of these, of the reputation rankings that we've produced. Do you think this is because these top schools are getting this right, or is it maybe a countrywide thing that U.S. schools just get the branding thing more? Ellie, what do you think?
I think it's a combination of factors. So I think the top six have stayed the top six since we first started doing these world reputation rankings. They've maybe switched order a little bit. And I think all of them have pretty long histories, which definitely helps when it comes to reputation. They've had quite a long time to not just build up a brand, but just, you know, build up their research capacity and strong teaching as well. I think, you know, universities in the US and UK, or the top universities, are rightly considered among the best in the world. And, I don't think you would necessarily dispute that those universities aren't all kind of leading. I think a big part is, as well, is the fact that they're kind of very, I guess they're very global universities, and they're very well connected. So we, you know, can see that universities in Asia are definitely becoming more well known, but when you look at kind of the Asian universities that appear in our world reputation rankings, most of the votes in the survey tend to come from within the country that they're based in. Whereas if you look at somewhere like Harvard or Cambridge, a lot of the votes, you know, are coming from kind of scholars all over the world. So I think universities in Asia still have a very strong reputation within the kind of their country or the continent, but maybe haven't built that up so well elsewhere in the world.
Right, so they maybe don't have this global reputation, but still has value if you've got a strong reputation within your country. If we're talking about educational outcomes, getting your students great jobs after they graduate, attracting local students to your institution. So even though some of the institutions that it might be lower down on our list, that's not to say that the reputation that they have isn't strong and doesn't still serve a purpose.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I guess this ranking, you know, is relatively narrow and measures one thing, and it's kind of the overall reputation among the world. Obviously, that's not at all to say that universities lower down, or even universities that don't make the list because, you know, that they just haven't built up that reputation. Obviously, you know, it doesn't mean they don't have value.
Ellie, you've also written some feature articles about the rankings this year, and you spoke with some non-US institutions. What did they have to say about branding and how important it was for their mission?
Yeah, so I spoke to Luc Sels, who's the rector at KU Leuven in Belgium. And he was quite interesting on this. But he believed that reputation was a really important thing. But he said it's not, you know, kind of end in itself. You know, it's not, universities don't want to do well just so that they have a good reputation. He said it was much more about building up a strong reputation in order to be able to kind of collaborate internationally with the best universities in the world. So so KU Leuven has done really well this year. It ranks 47th in our world ranking. It ranks in the 51 to 60 band in the world reputation rankings, up from 71 to 80. And one of the reasons for this, he said, was that it's got quite a strong international network. It's part of the LERU League of Research Universities. And yeah, he said kind of building up the university's reputation has been quite an intentional strategy there, because they want to have really strong collaborations with top universities worldwide. And the only way you can do that is to kind of build a name for yourself. And then when you have these collaborations, that then builds up the quality of your research and the quality of your teaching. So he saw it as very much aligned with the mission of the university, you know, not something that should be considered separately. It was all about basically building a really top institution.
Well, I had the chance to speak with Ovidia Lim, who is the Chief Communications Officer at the National University of Singapore, which rose to 24th place from 27th in this year's rankings. And it was quite interesting to hear what she was saying about how the university tries to make sure that every person on their campus, including students, faculty, researchers, administrators, they all have an NUS experience. And she was talking about the different target groups whenever they're thinking about their branding, from prospective students to current students to alumni. So she had quite an interesting insight into university branding. And so I started off our conversation by asking her how that branding reputation helps the university offer a valuable education to its students while still creating a space for world-class research. Here's what she had to say.
Well, I think a university's reputation and brand play a key part in creating a valuable educational experience for students. We know that students apply for universities based on their eligibility and programs that they're offered, and as well as the overseas and internship opportunities, and also the way employers value the knowledge and experiences that come with these degrees. So at NUS, students are offered multiple pathways. So aside from core content related to their specialization, they can customize their experiences. They can choose electives, entrepreneurship experiences, such as our NUS Overseas Colleges in 10 cities around the world, as well as internship opportunities in Singapore and overseas. It's important because last year, Global Employers placed NUS graduates as the 16th most employable in the world. In Singapore, close to 9 in 10 NUS fresh graduates secure employment within 6 months after final exams. And that was according to a survey by the Ministry of Education last year. And if you count full employment, once our graduates finish their practicum for law, medicine, pharmacy, and architectural studies, that's full employment. So it's been pretty good for the university. And based on our experience, I think that reputation and branding does play a part in it. In terms of research, we know that the best researchers are drawn to the quality of research produced and the research talent available in their field of expertise, as well as the kind of support available in funding and space. So we believe very much that a university's reputation and brand will play a key role in attracting research talent.
NUS hasn't always been a university where 9 out of 10 of its graduates are employed after 6 months. So can you talk me through a bit of what the process was to get where you are today?
Well, actually, our employment rate has been pretty good for the university. The university's history predates the country. So we started way back in 1905. And before NTU or Nanyang Technological University came along, we were pretty much the flagship university. So we never really had an issue with employment.
But in terms of branding and really becoming the flagship university of Singapore, how has that evolved? How have you managed to stay on top?
Well, we pretty much started in... So we trace our roots from 1905, but the university itself, National University of Singapore, came into being in 1980. So more than 10 years ago, the internal reaction to the word brand was fairly hostile. We didn't actually have a brand. We had a university, a very well-known one, but we didn't have a very strong vision or mission. And way back then, we had to refer to the brand as the B word. When we were about to launch the NUS vision and mission in January 2009. So people were cautious about what we were going to do with a revered Singaporean institution, because as a university, we have to date 6 presidents and prime ministers, many past and present leaders of the government, the opposition, judiciary, industry, civil society. So we treat our reputation and brand with a lot of respect, because we stand on the shoulders of those who went before us.
So it was a bit of an uphill battle to begin with, and whenever you started looking at doing some actual branding initiatives, what kind of exercises are you guys prioritizing now, 10 years into this?
We concentrate a lot on the brand experience, or what we call the felt experience. There are 2 parts to reputation and brand. Reputation is basically what people say about you, and the brand is what you say you are about. Some universities spend quite a bit of time and money telling people what they should think about their universities, but that has never been the NUS approach. We very much focus on content, on producing top-quality education and research. So when we talk about the felt experience, we try very hard to make sure that your NUS felt experience is a really good one, whether you're a student, faculty, researcher, staff, alumnus, collaborator, partner, or even a visitor. We pay a lot of attention to that. So in the area of entrepreneurship, for example, which we started in 2002, we actually have a global network of launch pads and incubation centers in Singapore, Jakarta, China, Europe, Israel, U.S., and we have a whole network of seasoned mentors and BC connections that our students can leverage on in Asia and around the world. So what happens is that our students actually pay it forward, and what you build in the end is this wonderful network of people who actually tell your stories for you. So it's word-of-mouth marketing. We have very nice stories to tell about students who have had successful startups. We had a startup called Zopim that was acquired for $30 million in 2014. We have another startup right now who's raised close to $130 million in funding, and they're very successful across 7 countries. So when you have these wonderful stories to tell, we find that the community tells them for you.
The invaluable successes of good marketing is word of mouth, recommendations.
Exactly. We don't spend on those big splashy campaigns. That's not in the NUS DNA. So we actually spend a lot of attention on the content, because we believe very much that if you focus on the fundamentals, the rest will take care of itself.
You've obviously been very successful about this, and branding is central to your mission of spreading the word about what NUS is about. But I'm wondering, why do you think some universities might find it a bit difficult to understand the value of branding and reputation?
I think that universities need to know where their stakeholders are and what their stakeholders pay attention to. It's very easy to just say, you know, spend this amount on a marketing campaign, on a global marketing campaign, and you know, people will give you results saying that this ad had thousands of people viewing it. But how do you know that that's true? So I think it's really important for universities to truly understand their stakeholders and to understand that they're not generic. You know, your prospective students are on one platform. Your current students are on a different platform, and your alumni are on a variety of platforms. The older alumni may be reading printed newspapers, but your younger alumni are not. So you really, really need to know your audience, and to understand that to reach out to them, it requires a variety of platforms and messages. There is no one single message that could work for all, in my view.
And that was Avidia Lim from the National University of Singapore. So that's it for today. Ellie, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
You can see the full results of our World Reputation Ranking and find our coverage of the results, as well as commentary from Harry J. Elam, the Senior Vice Provost for Education at third-ranked Stanford University, on our website, timeshighereducation.com. And as always, if you have any suggestions for the podcast, you can send them to me, sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.